Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Meanwhile, Lee, Zoran Mankami not giving up on his plan for government-owned grocery stores so bad that even the CNN host pointing out to him why he might have trouble getting this to work in New York City. You mean it's been tried? Yeah.
Yeah. Numerous places.
Numerous places.
Even in this country, believe it or not.
I know. And in the former USSR.
Yes.
Where people literally starved to death and froze to death for lack of winter coats. Because you were not allowed to buy anything except from the government store.
Right.
And you had credits to do it.
Exactly.
They actually had a problem some years with running. They would run out of winter coats. It's freezing in Russia. And people would just die. They would just drop dead from the cold. Outside, because you would be required to come and stand for hours listening to political speeches. They'd run out of coats at basically the communist store, and people, you know, you knew you better be there or you're going to lose your job. If you lost your job, you're going to lose your food card. If you lost your food card, you weren't going to eat. They'd starve you. So you had to be in good standing with the party. And that literally meant, if you've ever seen any of these old Soviet speeches where they're screaming for hours, and there's these huge crowds there, those people didn't want to be there. You wouldn't dare not show up. Well, the problem was they just ran out of coats, and people would literally die standing there in the crowd because they didn't have a warm coat, because they were not allowed to buy it anywhere else. So the left always does one thing, Lee. They always go for two things when they pursue communism or socialism: control of food and control of power, i.e. electricity or whatever form of power that they're using. So you're seeing Zoran Mamdani's a good socialist. He is a good anti-capitalist, communist, authoritarian. He is doing what Marx tells you to do. You can control the people if you can control the food. And of course, the first step in that, Lee, is depolicing, making it so that theft is practically legal, as it is in California. Or you just don't get police response, or you bond them right back out. They come right back to the store and steal things. Now everything's got to be behind glass. It's too expensive to operate. Stores closing, giving up. Bed Bath & Beyond saying, California's the only state we're not going to open a store in. So once you've established pretty much the right to steal, you can get to the second phase after you destroy, you know, these stores. And you have create the food deserts, then the government comes in with government-controlled food. But Lee, even CNN isn't buying it.
Why is the government a better solution for a lack of grocery stores, food deserts, than just working with the private sector to have them do what they know how to do, which is run grocery stores? What's your answer to that?
There are more than 1,000 grocery stores in New York City. I'm proposing creating 5 additional ones, one in each borough of New York City that the city would run, and that would guarantee cheaper groceries, not free food, but cheaper groceries. And part of that is because food is a necessity for New Yorkers. It's a necessity for everyone. And yet it's something that people are being priced out of. And we can see the promise and the possibility of a public option. And we've seen in studies that have been done about the applicability of this in an urban setting like Chicago, that this is something we can actually deliver right here in
New
York City.
But there was another example in Kansas City where they had a government-run grocery store, and it's been there for years, but it's on the verge of closing because it doesn't work. They've been riddled with crime. They've dealt with just a lack of inventory. There are other examples where it just hasn't worked because, frankly, the government is not that good at being in the business of being in grocery stores.
Well, the government's not in good at being in the business of anything except being in business's business.
Yeah, well, look, this is what they wanted to do in Chicago, too. You cut the police force, you depolice, stores rob blind, they close down, and then you turn around and open government-controlled stores. This is all, none of this is an accident. It's all the same plan.
Yeah. And I challenge him to show me the statistics or the study where that showed that was a practical and successful solution anywhere.
He doesn't have them.
No, of course not.
Because it isn't.
It doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't work. But he's still determined to try it, though. So we're going to open government-run grocery stores, but I guess close down prisons. So once you empty the prisons, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to rob the stores blind, whichever ones are open still. I mean, I don't know if his plan is just to let them rob the government store, too. I don't know how that works. They're Democrat. They'll call Democrat Party headquarters and ask them. They can explain. I don't know how this would work. Here he is. He's just in 2020. This just came out. Him saying that he thinks prisons are obsolete. It was on a kind of an older podcast, but it resurfaced.
Are prisons obsolete?
I think that, frankly, I mean, what purpose do they serve?
What purpose do they serve? So this is where the Democrat Party's going. What purpose do they serve? We should just, you can't think about that. There are murderers and rapists in prisons. What purpose do they serve?
Well, first off, it protects the citizens from those who've been convicted of crimes for at least a while they're still within the walls there.
I guess.
And it also serves as punishment, which for some people, not all, unfortunately, may be somewhat of a deterrent toward crime. There's a couple of examples of purpose it serves, which is pretty much common sense, but, it's not very common these days.
No, it's definitely not. Meanwhile, speaking of prisons, that's where the Democrats want to send Trump for blowing up that speedboat coming out of Venezuela. Did you see over the weekend Trump was asked, hey, are you thinking about maybe bombings inside of Venezuela? And he said, wait and see what's coming.
No.
So this is about to get very interesting. But the good news is Trump is going right for the source, the Sinaloa cartel. I mean, when you look at the largest drug bust ever, if you're looking at it in terms of pounds, happening just this last week, and what did they do? You can tell what they're doing. They're looking at the satellites and going, wow, okay, we've used the military, we've closed the border. Now they have to move the people and the drugs in by boat. They're out on the open water. They're a lot easier to hit. And all you got to do with our satellites is hit rewind.
Yeah.
It's better than a VCR, you know? People may not know what that is if you...
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the old days.
Better than a VCR. Where'd it come from? Well, then you can watch the Tren de Aragua. You can watch them taking off from Venezuela. And then you can watch what? Where did the 700,000 pounds of drug precursor materials come from? Oh, Shanghai, China.
Mm-hmm.
So you're watching it move from Shanghai, moves into the hands of the Venezuelan cartel, that is the government, and then they move it into the Sinaloa cartel pipeline. Goes right to America. So you can see it's as if the Trump people are kind of confused. Why is he going after Venezuela? It's as if the Trump people just hit rewind. Well, they move the precursor chemicals. That's where Sinaloa gets them. But they've been forced out on the water now. And, I just love watching this. You have someone like Bill Crystal Lee who wants to blow up everybody all the time. I mean, total warmonger, fake Republican. He's always trashing Trump for them. And he's finally found a war he does not want to participate in, and that is the war against the cartels. And he's saying this is an outrage. You know why? They know Sinaloa was the big cartel moving a lot of this human traffic into the country, and they know this is an attack on the Democrats' voter drive. And that's why they're not happy about it. They know these cartels are who they're a very important leg of the human trafficking of the 12 million voters. They didn't just start walking and show up here. It's very organized. Now think about who was funding this. When we talked about the $13 billion from Congress run through the UN that ends up being given out in cash and on debit cards to illegals coming up here. The cartels are moving them. They need people to move the human traffic. Trump is disrupting that. That's what he's doing. That's why they don't like it. Oh, my gosh. Trump's right now on Fox News saying Otto Penn was our president.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, this whole thing with this Charlotte stabbing is really touching a nerve. And you know what I think it is? It's because we have video of it.
Yeah,
it's real.
That is what has reignited this. I mean, we heard about it here when it happened and have covered it somewhat. But yeah, it is really taking off now in national interest because of that really horrific video. Like I said, I haven't seen the one where it completely shows the conclusion, but... the one where it takes you right up to where the suspect begins the stabbing attack. And it's just like a completely innocent victim. I tell you, if I ever take light rail, which I'm not likely to, I would certainly try and find one of those seats where your back's against the wall, not where there's someone behind you. That's because that's what this suspect was doing with this poor, innocent, hardworking refugee from Ukraine.
Yeah, a lot of people saying, and there's a great post on this online, like, you know, let this be a lesson. It's time to move out of blue cities. And if you can't do that, avoid public transportation. If you can't do that, carry a gun. And if you can't do that, never let your guard down, because, you know, this is a public place in a Democrat area where they're just going to turn even the most violent criminals back out on the streets. And they're determined to try to coexist and live with them. That doesn't work out well for people.
Yeah.
So, all right, we'll be right back.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Asking me, wait, what article? What? Hold on, where can I find that? Just went ahead and posted it on my X account to understand everything that is going on now. If you're one of my Battleground America listeners, you know about this. You understand why it is that Tom Homan is talking about the Sinaloa cartel, and Stephen Miller, his deputy chief of staff, is talking about the Sinaloa cartel. It all ties together. Why? 2014 article, Fox News. What they report that what a cartel member had been rounded up and was facing trial, and his attorney files a brief. And this is sort of, I guess you would call it, an offensive brief. In the brief, the attorney says, look, I did. Look, my client was paid by the FBI to run drugs and people into the U.S. Oh, and he was armed by the FBI, too. In other words, we felt like we had entree into the country. Wait, what? Sinaloa cartel, y'all. The article's in Fox News, and it changed the way I look at everything. So when you see that massive human trafficking, it's so well organized, comes out of nowhere with the beginning of the Obama administration, or with the Biden administration, really goes back to the Obama administration with, you know, just hitting the border with 1,500, 2,000, 1,500 at a time. That was organized. The article to understand everything Trump's trying to undo right now, what's going on, it's called America's Third War. The U.S. cut a deal with the Sinaloa cartel, say court documents. It's from Fox News, published August 5th, 2011. U.S. federal agents cut a deal with the Sinaloa drug cartel that allowed it to traffic tons of narcotics across the border, as well as people. The allegations were made by Vicente Zambada Nabila, top-ranking cartel boss extradited to the U.S. last year, so that would have been 2010, on drug charges. He's a close associate of Mexico's most wanted man, Joaquin El Chapo Guzman. So in it, the Sinaloa cartel lawyer says, look, we were invited to do this by the FBI. We were armed by them. We were funded by them. And our drug and human smuggling routes were protected by them. So Fox News calls up the FBI. Hey, is this going on? I mean, this sounds a little crazy, but you're like arming Sinaloa? They admitted it. They admitted it. According to the motion, the deal was part of a divide and conquer strategy where the U.S. helped finance and arm. This is mind-blowing. This is illegal, by the way. Where the U.S. helped finance and arm the Sinaloa cartel through Operation Fast and Furious in exchange for information, they said, this is what the FBI's excuse was, that allowed the DEA and the FBI to destroy and dismantle rival Mexican cartels. Okay, now that sends my BS meter into outer space. Let me get this straight. You armed and financed the Sinaloa cartel and protected their human trafficking and drug routes into the U.S. Yes. Supposedly so they'd, what, rat out their rivals too? That doesn't make any sense. They'd rat out their rivals for free. They want you to pick up their rivals. Less competition. Well, you know, there's a code of honor. Oh, but there's no honor if the FBI funds you? Folks, let me tell you what's really going on here. That's just an excuse. The FBI works for the Democrat Party. We've seen that with the Russia collusion hoax. We've seen them helping to cover up Hillary's crimes, helping to cover up the 19,000 licenses sent in here by the Chinese to be used for fake absentee ballots in the 2020 election. We've seen the FBI do these things that are criminal again and again and again to help the Democrats electorally. What you're seeing here is the FBI, late Obama era, building the smuggling routes and saying, hey, look, we'll arm you, we'll finance you. We're going to claim you're going to turn your rivals over to us in exchange. They don't need to arm and finance them for them to turn over their rivals, to do it for free. This was to build the capacity to move the Democrats' new voter nation into the country. You were going to need 12 to 24 million. You were, just to really make sure we live in a one-party system. So this is where it started, folks. Now, fast forward to today. Fast forward to who we have hit in the last week. Same cartel, Sinaloa. We've hit them hard. Who does Venezuela move precursor drug materials and fentanyl-laced cocaine for? Well, we watched this week on the satellite as the materials that came from Shanghai, China, moving through Venezuela, Tren de Aragua, and guess what? We pick them up with the largest ever drug bust, 700,000 pounds of precursor materials. Again, it's Venezuela moving the materials for China to the Sinaloa cartel. These are the same drug routes the FBI established when it armed, financed, and trained Sinaloa. This is what we are deconstructing. Now, listen to Stephen Miller, Deputy Chief of Staff for Donald Trump, talk about cartel and specifically mention Sinaloa and tie it in to why Trump is going into Chicago and all of these areas. Why? To pick up the gangsters ensconced there who are hiding in sanctuary cities, who are hiding, under the protection of the Democrat Party. This is Trump doing what he has to do to end the voter drive via Sinaloa, but in tracing it, it goes all the way back to the Chinese, because of course it does. They want Democrats in control so they can ultimately be in control of America.
Nicolas Maduro is an indicted drug trafficker. He is indicted in federal court. He is a fugitive from justice in America. There's a $50 million reward for the return of Nicolas Maduro. Not just him, his henchmen have also been indicted. So it is a drug cartel that is running Venezuela. This is a very important point. It's not a government. It is a drug cartel, a narco trafficking organization that is running Venezuela. And this has been documented in federal court, and indictments have been secured. The people of Venezuela have been suffering and struggling under the reality of a nation that is so rich in resources, so rich in reserves, that is run by Maduro, the head of the cartel that you referenced, the Cartel de los Soles. That is absolutely one of the most ruthless criminal cartels on the planet. And many Americans may not realize that the drugs killing their kids are coming from Maduro. And also the criminal aliens killing their kids are coming from Maduro. So he's sending his drugs, he is sending his killers, his assassins into our communities, and he's working directly with other designated foreign terrorist organizations like the FARC in Colombia and all the Mexican drug cartels. So it's one continuous loop.
One continuous loop, and Venezuela is the China connection.
For decades and for years, for generations, we used our military to engage in action against terrorists in the Middle East and in Africa while leaving unharmed the terrorists in our own hemisphere who are responsible for so much more American deaths, who have spilled so much blood across the Western Hemisphere, who have bereaved so many parents and families, who have contributed to such a horrific cycle and just nonstop, relentless surge of violence in our cities. Every major city in America is suffering from cartel violence. Even the U.S.-based gangs, they're working directly with these cartels. The drugs, the guns, the weapons, the cash, the organization. We've been occupied by cartels for far too long. President Trump is finally allowing and directing the United States military to use its authorities under the Constitution to defend America from the terrorist organizations that have run free for too long in our own hemisphere. Thank you all. Thank you for the question.
So notice how he ties in the crime, the raids on the cities, but also the cartels. And so Tom Homans asked about this, and he's asked here about Chicago and going into Chicago. And what is he talking about? Chicago? Sinaloa.
And President Trump is committed to ending the cartel violence in this country. And look, the Sinaloa cartel is now in 42 countries across the globe. Again, their time in the United States is limited under President Trump.
These are the Democrats' human trafficking networks that he's coming after. And you can't do that without hitting China, Venezuela, and then ultimately ripping Sinaloa out by the roots. That's what's happening. This is a political fight, not just a crime or a...
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Drug fight. Folks, Anthony Fauci's handling of COVID was such an unmitigated disaster. It required a criminal pardon at the end of it, which, by the way, he did not have to accept from Joe Biden, but he did. What does that mean? He committed crimes. Now, all these members of the Senate, they up in arms about that? Nah, they don't care. I mean, Rand Paul does. He keeps hauling Fauci before the Senate. But other than that, man, Mike Lee, a couple others, they don't care. They don't give a damn. Ted Cruz, other than that, they don't care. But let RFK, who's now head of Health and Human Services, try to clean up that cesspool. Well, now we have a problem, on, you know, mainly from Democrat and some Republican members of the Senate who have taken hundreds of thousands of dollars from the pharmaceutical lobby. So RFK went on Fox News. Here's how he described that outrageous hearing last week.
I've come to realize that those hearings are performative. They're theater. And then all of those senators are taking hundreds of thousands of dollars, including in some cases millions of dollars from the pharmaceutical industry. So they don't want to hear the answers to the questions that they ask me. They want to make a little speech and then shut me down. But they can't deny the fact that the CDC is a broken agency. We did worse in COVID than any country in the world. We have 4.2% of the world's population. We have 20% of the world's COVID deaths. We're the worst team in the league. I've been brought in as the new manager, and you know my job is to shake up the organization, to fire the people who are responsible for masking our children with no science, for social distancing orders with no science, for all of the other things that they try for closing our schools at the behest of the teachers' union and hurting workers all over America. We literally did worse than any country in the world, and it was because we forgot about the science. What the Trump administration is going to do is to return gold standard science and make this agency the lead agency for public health in the world once again.
Okay. So getting a violent reaction to doing science, what specifically is he doing that they don't like? He pulled the emergency use authorization and said that the COVID shots, but also the new mRNA flu shots, have to undergo the same double-blind testing before they can be given to the public that every other vaccine goes through. That sounds like science, right? Yeah, it's science. They're actually mad that he wants to do science instead of just you being the guinea pig and we'll see if you're still alive in 10 years. And if you're not, well, then it didn't work. Okay, so they're outraged at him. They want him to resign rather than do science. They prefer people like this. Folks, this just went viral over the weekend. This is former CDC director under Joe. She was appointed by Joe Biden. She took over after the disastrous Rochelle Walensky. former CDC director Mandy Cohen on how she made decisions to shut down sporting events. And I'm going to give you a hint. There's no science involved. And by the way, all of these politicians in the Senate who are up in arms over RFK, they didn't care a lick about this.
So I would call, probably the person I called most was the Secretary of Health and Human Services in Massachusetts. She worked for a Republican governor just to, but, you know, when she was like, are you going to let them have professional football? And I was really like, nope. And she's like, okay, neither are we. you know, it was like conversations like that. So, or I'd be like, so when are you going to think about lightening up a mess? They're like next Monday. I'm like, okay, next Monday.
Yeah, so I just called my friend, and we just talked. We decided what to shut down. It was so cool. Yeah, and by the time they were done, more than 95,000 businesses had gone out of business. Just shutting down this and shutting down that and just, you know, reveling in their power. Never to reopen, by the way. They told us it was the science. You got to follow the science. Can't question us. In fact, Anthony Fauci, again, who has now accepted a criminal pardon, said, I am the science, and that was all that was needed. They thought it was going to go forever. It was the biggest party ever. The coolest thing, they had total dictatorship. And so all they had to say was, we are the science. We did the science. What science? We don't have to show you. But you're hearing, again, that woman is a CDC director. Well, if I wanted to shut something down, I'd just call my friend and we decided if we were going to. You know how many businesses that got in? And you're talking even just like shutting down sporting events just because? During an era where, you know, Summer of Love protests. And if you want to protest that now, you can march all you want. But if you want to go to a sporting event or, you know, you're just the wrong kind of business, you can't be open. Why? Because the Democrat Party says so. Because the Democrat Party says so. Meanwhile, folks, I meant to get more into this today. I'm going to do it tomorrow. Just kind of a preview of tomorrow's show. Headline. Odds are you haven't heard a word about the most important upheaval in American culture and politics. In decades, and I'd say more than decades. I'd say 100 years. I'll tell you what it is coming up next. Odds are you haven't heard a word about the most important upheaval in American culture in politics. Folks, there's a lot of changes going on right now. The first sign something was wrong from the perspective of our elites was this. And it's probably the coolest chart I've posted in a long time. Among 18 to 29-year-olds, highest Republican registration among men in 100 years. You go back to, I kid you not, 1925, you cannot find higher Republican registration than right now among young men. 58% voted for Donald Trump. A full 14-point gain since the beginning of the last decade. So roughly 2012, 2013. That is a massive shift. There have been a shift with women too. It's not toward the right. It's not anywhere near as dramatic. They're still majority Democrat, but enough of a loss. This is killing them. So we've already seen those numbers, and they are shocking. And the last Republican to win a majority of men under the age of 29 was George W. Bush, and Trump did it by more, 58%. Is it because of politics, though, and maybe some stuff Trump said? No, something deeper is going on, and this is the cool part. So you've told me 10 years ago this would happen, I'd be like, what? There's no way. I mean, I would have thought if people returned to church, it would be boomers, right? It would be older people coming to the end of their lives and starting to ask some questions of themselves about the lives they've lived. No, it's not them. For the first time in decades, younger adults, actually it's the first time ever, Gen Z and millennials, are now the most regular churchgoers, outpacing older generations who once formed the backbone of church attendance. Millennials and Gen Z are driving a resurgence in church attendance as reports emerge of spiritual interest, rising faith activity, signs of revival. But it's the number. It's the numbers. Millennials and Gen Z Christians are attending church more frequently than any other generation. And much more often than older generations. The typical Gen Z churchgoer now attends 1.9 weekends per month, with millennial churchgoers averaging 1.8 times. Average church attendance for older adults is 1.6. So this These are young people leading the way. And here's what's really interesting about what's like why this they think this is happening. Part of it is proselytization on YouTube, on X, on Twitter, or, you know, like on X, Twitter, on TikTok. And people are getting a message in a way before they couldn't do it. There's a lot of these online influencers who are deeply religious, and it's spreading, and they, I guess, haven't figured out a way to stop it. I think this is fantastic. Because more than anything else, social phenomenon, political beliefs, faith will drive how people vote and what they value, but also conversely what they want to defeat. So unbelievable numbers. Why Gen Z could be the revival generation, and Gen Z embraces the Bible in unexpected global spiritual awakening. Yeah, you know why? Two reasons. Every generation does this, and it's a good thing. They rebel against what was before. Whatever their parents are into, they want to be in the opposite. Why? That's, I think it's part of the brain that makes teenagers want to like leave the nest. Because ultimately, you want to get them out there so they'll start their own family. I mean, that was the whole purpose of the project, right? So they're going to rebel. Whatever their parents are into, it doesn't matter. Their nature is they're going to rebel against it. They're going to go the opposite way. Well, you know, you look at the previous generations who at record rates abandoned church. So you know what that means? Church is new again. It's exotic. If you haven't grown up in those pews and you come in and you've already, you know, maybe had somebody online that influenced you, you're reading the Bible, your parents didn't grow up with that, that'll really punch you in the gut. It's new. It's exciting. But you know what else? It has meaning in a culture that is just so meaningless. So this, folks, those numbers are incredible. And you know what's really interesting about it? This is the other flip that we're seeing too. The most liberal generations were always the young ones. The whole time I've been doing this, whole time I've been painting, not anymore. You look at these protests now when they got to have real people out that they don't pay. And in some cases they do pay. The left, who are they? They're boomers. They're angry, old, gray-haired liberals. It's not the younger people. Texture writes, Charlie Kirk should get a lot of credit. Yeah, and there is this sort of young generation of men out there who are pretty cool. Both my sons are pretty hardcore right-wingers, and it's not because of me. I'm mom, so they just roll their eyes, right? They're, whatever. No, I mean, I would say it's Matt Walsh. It's Ben Shapiro. It's people like that that they're emulating and looking up to as an example of malehood that they just, that's positive, that they just can't find in our culture. And, you know, after you spend enough time listening to them, before you know it, you're watching Christian YouTube video. I could see how it got seen in my own house. That's good news. It's going to be hard for them to undo this.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.